Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Evildoers plot to bomb Spokane's MLK Day parade. McMenamins expands its Portland empire even further, and North America's oldest elephant dies.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. A plot to bomb a Martin Luther King Jr. Day parade was foiled in Spokane, Washington, an hour before the city's celebratory procession was set to start. City employees noticed a suspicious backpack on Monday morning and notified police. Officials rerouted the parade while the bomb squad disabled the device. The bomb was meant to be activated remotely and shoot shrapnel into the marching crowd. The potential for injury and death were clearly present, said an FBI officer. Officials released pictures of the backpack, which contained two T-shirts alongside the bomb. The FBI is offering a $20,000 reward for information that will lead them to the perpetrator. White supremacist groups are active in the region, and though law enforcement officials said it was too early to settle on a motive, the confluence of the holiday, the march, and the device is inescapable.
Yes, let's all ponder for a moment and see if we can take all the necessary steps to figure out what the motive might have been. Let's also note that, A, really, you're just foiled in general by dint of living in Spokane. I mean, you know, being born there, currently residing there, I mean, it's just sort of an inherent foiling of everything. Your hopes, your dreams, your ambitions, any goals you might ever have. Let's also note that anything that is, quote, celebratory in Spokane is so in the most relative sense only. It's a bad place to live.
I want to know if the two T-shirts in the backpack had anything printed on them.
That was actually what I was thinking, too, because that would sort of fit right in line with... Because I mean, I don't really want to shatter anybody's illusions here, but people who are white supremacists are typically not that bright. They're not even in the gene pool. They're sort of like in the filter for the gene pool where it like sucks all the sludgy whatnot in, and then you just take it and like once a week you're going to go and hose it out into your compost heap.
Yeah, it takes a special sort of combination of hatefulness and fear and just stupid to be a white supremacist.
Was it,
really?
Were you the one that I was having this discussion with about how I used to be on the mailing list for a bunch of white supremacist literature?
Yes, you did tell me that.
A guy named Kurt the Nazi. And just like in The New Yorker, the cartoons are really the best part of all that literature. They're just...
Do you still have those?
I do. They're in a big box of stuff in my basement.
I'd like to see those, particularly just for the cartoons, really.
I could... I have this... there's a whole section of my basement that's just set aside for keeping all my radio crap. And I'm not really a pack rat in general, but I do keep my radio stuff. And there is... And it's not really divided out by market or anything, or by radio station that I worked at. But it's sort of like counting the like sedimentary rock layers or the rings in a tree or something. The deeper in you go, the farther back you are in my radio career. And there is this one section where there's just a bunch of badly printed T-shirts from radio stations where like they never hired somebody to do spell checking before they would have. Can I just tell you this? There's this one T-shirt I have. This is from a station I worked at before I was in Spokane, where the general manager, it was really just like, it's where you realize that working at a radio station in a small town, or even in a large city sometimes, is not unlike working at WKRP in Cincinnati. It really is, that is not a satire or a parody in many ways, it's an accurate depiction of the reality. The general manager was just doing cartwheels at one point because we'd gotten our very first radio station T-shirts made in like 4 years, because there'd just been no money in the budget. So... We finally were able probably through the number of firings, had scraped together the amount of money necessary to make radio station T-shirts. And they were all like, it was the 80s, so they were all like day glow. They were like bright orange and fluorescent pink and with like a picture of like a, like a Corvette in the middle of it or something. And the slogan at the bottom of the T-shirt, for no readily apparent reason, because it bore no relation to anything we ever said on the air, it was that the radio station was going to be, quote, going ballistic. Except that ballistic was misspelled. They'd used
what,
one.
What town was this in?
This was in Kennewick.
Ah, in Kennewick.
To no one's surprise, they used one L, not two. So that was a. And then somebody, and it wasn't me, honestly. Somebody pointed that out to the general manager, and we really shouldn't have, because then not only were we broke for the rest of the year because we'd spent all the T-shirt money, but then we couldn't actually use the T-shirts because she took them all away and we never saw them again. I have one, though. I have it in my basement at home.
Couldn't you have just gotten an intern to just, like, get a Sharpie and write one more L in between on every single shirt?
If only you'd been there in Kennewick at the time.
I am a problem solver, Rick Everson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so right around the same time, if you look into the same box, you'll see that later on that year I moved to Spokane to get a whole new series of bad radio station T-shirts and literature from Kurt the Nazi, who lived in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And Coeur d'Alene, of course
he did.
Borders Spokane, and Spokane is right near Medellin Falls, and that's, and it's like Darwin's waiting room, that whole place. That was my first guess, though, when you said that there were T-shirts in this. It was when somebody, not quite thinking it through, said, hey, I'm going to bomb the MLK parade. And then
the bomb is rattling around too much. What can I? I'll just grab a couple of these random T-shirts with slogans and maybe the insignia of my organization, of which there are three members.
See, I was thinking it was actually the other way, that he was thinking he would send a real powerful message, to the Zionists about their organization by putting some literature and some T-shirts and some insignia in there right next to a thing that was going to blow up and render it all pointless.
Well, yeah, there is that, too.
There's really a win-win, stupidity-wise, however you look at it. Hey, you're listening to Legion of News. It is Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, also Science on the March. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Also on your mobile device, that is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
The House begins debate today on repealing the president's health care reform law. CNN political analyst David Gergen says he's surprised at how the attitude in Washington has changed in the last few weeks.
What are the names of these?
This is Health 3.
What's stunning to me is how much the political landscape has changed just in the last few weeks. So we thought you'd have these angry Republicans coming in and the country would rally behind them. There'd be a lot of desire for health care repeal. The polls are not showing that.
Gergen said it's a smart move on the part of Republicans who promised to try to repeal the law.
I think it's smart. I think this is the opening act, in effect, of a longer play. Yeah. And this is an important moment when they really can make some arguments and refresh the debate.
I'm glad that David Gergen is still around. David Gergen, more than almost anybody that you see on television doing political analysis, does seem like a guy who's been beamed in from the cast of The West Wing. He has that rare confluence of, he's sort of entertaining, but he's sort of level-headed, but he's reasonable, but he's occasionally sort of wryly funny, and then occasionally he'll just wear a pink tie for no reason. And then everybody sort of comments on it, and he just, you know, and then he'll mutter something sort of whimsical, and then the conversation continues.
Then he punches a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a poll, results of one of those major huge polls was released today. I think it was USA Today or CNN,
huge
one of those.
Huge poll.
I guess both the Republicans and the Democrats are, like, taking what they will from that to try and use it as an argument because, like, almost exactly 50% of Americans that they surveyed would like to see this health care reform law be repealed. But, like, something like 86% said, oh, yes, but health care is really effed.
I'd still like some health care.
And we'd like you to fix it, please.
Yeah. It's just... To me, it's just, it's sort of like, it's like half the country is malnourished, you know, and it has nothing to eat. And the government solution is to come to your house with a gun and force you to go to the store and buy something, even though you don't have the money to do so.
And something that's not even really that good for you.
Yeah. And by the way, yeah, it's just going to be Mueslix. That's it. It's just going to be gruel.
The Downtown Portland Lions Club is helping make sure animals at the Oregon Zoo have good vision. The club raised funds through its annual auction to purchase a portable lamp that allows zoo veterinarians to quickly check the eyes of several different animals, including lions and elephants. Zoo veterinarian Mitch Finnegan said it can be difficult to maintain eye health for some animals. When your patients range in size from small birds to 6-ton elephants, you need flexible, high-quality veterinary equipment. The director of the zoo said the new equipment will make a big difference and that 2008 bond measure passed by voters will help fund construction of the zoo's future veterinary medical center.
I don't even know where to go on this. Hold on. I got like five different observations I can make. Let me think of which one I should do. I'll just go with the obvious one first. Don't you think that they should just train monkeys to do all of this stuff for us? I mean, because occasionally, this is one of those stories that's going to, like a year from now, we will be reading about one of the guys who went in to just try to see, like, check out the cataract that a lion had or something, or that he would, like, you know, some wildebeest, and then he's just going to be a goring, and then they're going to be taking the guy out in a stretcher, and we're going to have some story about how he was just, like, trying to yank the thing's eyelid open to shine a bright light into it, when inexplicably the animal was aroused to a state of anger. And it just took a big, and just clawed the guy. So it seems like monkeys are basic. We train them to do everything. All we train monkeys to do is bad stuff, you know? Hey, learn to smoke and juggle chainsaws. Why can't we just train monkeys to do, like, sort of low-level health maintenance things on other animals?
I can see training them to at least help.
Because you could train them to use a taser, too, in case the other animal got out of line.
Because the monkeys can't really do the actual medicine because, you know, they don't know.
Fit them with a camera, though.
But, you could teach them how to, like, shine the light into the elephant's eye.
And if it was a flashlight that actually had a camera attached to it, then they could train them to go and go, and, like, pull open the thing's eye and shine the light in.
And then you're, like, 100 yards away and you're safe.
You're like a surgeon doing that remote operation from Sydney over, like, an ISDN line to a guy in Philadelphia. We're now going into the ventricle canal. And, okay, now you want it 3 micrometers to the left, or whatever.
And it's good for the monkeys because it gives them a purpose and it's
self-esteem.
Good for their self-esteem. Exactly.
My other thing was going to be this. So the Lions Club, is that the group that's always, like, you just see them, like, they have rolls of mints at bad restaurants in, like, St. Helens?
Yeah, and there's that big building just a few blocks from here that I drive by almost every day that just says, Lions Club iBank. And that always kind of freaks me out because I just imagine that there's like a big room full
of safety deposit
boxes full of eyes.
Which, I mean, who's to say?
I'm sure that it's not like that at all, but that's what I imagined in my head.
Well, what does it mean, an iBank, though?
Well, when they actually run one of those services, they're a nonprofit. Well, the Lions Club is one of those organizations, kind of like the Shriners, where business people join it. And their particular thing, their public service thing that they do is they run these iBanks and they help with the process of...
like donors or something?
Yeah, donors and cataract donors and stuff like that. And members of the Lions Club will actually go between the hospitals and transport the cataracts and the donations and stuff back and forth. And I guess the iBank, they must have some kind of deep freeze where they can store these things.
How is that even legal? How can the Lions Club, which is not a medical, I don't have a problem with it, but I'm saying you and I just couldn't start a deep freeze here and just start keeping hands around or something.
Probably not.
What do you got, freezer full of ears?
They've been doing it for a long time, though, so I guess
grandfathered in.
They must have some kind of special permits store eyes.
It's just strange, right? Like if you just said, what do you got? Well, we've got a whole closet full of teeth at the studio. Come look at it sometime. And we occasionally put them into other people. The Lions Club just seems like one of those organizations that doesn't really exist. Like it exists only like in Happy Days reruns And like, I've never known anybody who was a member of the Lions Club.
Yeah,
ever.
I don't know if they actually have meetings like the Shriners and the Masons do. I mean, I don't know if they actually like get together and put on lion hats and do like the rawr, you know, kind of secret handshake at each other or something.
Some sort of a slogan.
Yeah, I think they just sort of, you know, you own a business or you're a businessman and you become a member of the Lions Club, and then you get to network with other business guys, which is good for your business, which is why most men join these organizations, let's be honest. And then their particular thing, so they can feel good about themselves and help the public, is they store eyeballs or something.
I just figured it was a way to booze and get away from your wife.
I think that has something to do with it as well.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
McMenamins is planning to open its downtown Portland hotel later this year. A company spokesman said the Crystal Hotel will be located next to McMenamins Crystal Ballroom at West Burnside and 12th. Work is underway on a renovation of the downtown space. The grand opening for the hotel is scheduled for May 3rd.
What is there now?
I guess some old flophouse hotel.
I do know that place. Because there was a big article, I think, in the Mercury or somebody. They did a huge piece about it. They did something really fascinating, actually. This is the place I'm thinking of, and I think it is. It was a hotel. In other words, it was a hotel. It's going to be a hotel again. But it was, yeah, as you said, it was sort of a transient, like a hotel for men, one of those places. And I think the Mercury went in as they were demolishing the place, and they got permission to sort of walk around inside. And they did what sounds horrible, or at least uninteresting to some people, but was sort of fascinating to me. It was like taking the lights-up tour of a haunted house, where you get to see how everything works and how the mannequins are rigged with, you know, electronics to make them spring out. They did, like, this sort of lights-up demolition of this place, which I think had become a sort of, I think it had become a sort of cruising location for certain segments of the community. And they did just this sort of walkthrough of just all these, like, quasi-abandoned rooms. And I think at one point they found, it was the most horrifying thing, it was like a Cracker Jack box full of the worst prizes imaginable. I think they found like a mattress that was full of old syringes, which is like layers of bad when you're finding an old stained mattress filled with hypodermic needles. And I think that was the deal, is it had become just a sort of a hangout for like sex and drugs and people who, you know, were either homeless or, you know, just didn't really care where they were for 5 or 6 minutes. And so they had to gut the entire place out. But there was a really fascinating, it was almost like one of those urban wreckage photo essays where they walked through this place and took all of the photographs of it as it was being destroyed.
Yeah, they actually, McMenamins had two hotel projects in the works, and they announced them back in 2008, I think. And they were going to open them both in 2009, and then economic problems caused them to put both of them on hold. And there's this one, which is actually going ahead and is finally, I guess, supposed to, they've started production on it and renovation. It's going to open in May. And then the other one is apparently they also own the Cornelius Hotel at Southwest Aldern Park, which is another one of those old, you know, it catered to business travelers back in the day, but became like, you know, just a shooting
a
gallery
dive.
At a dive.
I love places like that, though, in a weird sort of strange way. I have this real affinity for junk and for just for trash and for things that are part of a the low culture, as they say. So somebody should go through and photograph that place before they you know,
I'm
get
sure
rid of it.
I hope they will. Somebody should. And then the Crystal Hotel, it's going to be another one of their sort of small boutique kind of things, because it's only going to have 51 rooms.
Right.
And it's going to like start at like $85 a night. So.
Yeah, right.
There. A Craigslist ad offering to sell frozen mother's milk is being called very dangerous by officials with the Mother's Milk Bank at Rocky Mountain Hospital for Children.
Do they compete with the Lions somehow? Is there like a... See, that this is exactly what we were just talking about. They just started a bank, the Mother's Milk Bank. Like, what the hell?
Well, it's at a hospital, so
so it's not just like some people.
No.
Okay.
There's an ad. The ad on Craigslist begins, "I am a very healthy mom, never done drugs, smoked, or even drank alcohol, of 3 kids. She said she's producing more milk than she needs and has more than 200 ounces of it in a freezer and would like to sell it, but she's willing to work out some kind of a trade, I guess." In December, the FDA issued a warning to parents about the risk of disease, including HIV or contamination, from unscreened donors of breast milk. I guess Craigslist is kind of looking into this.
I guess. I mean, it stands to reason that you probably... I mean, you... How do I put this? If you just had kids, unless there's something physically wrong with you, in which case you'd be under a doctor's care for this, it seems like you would be producing your own milk. And So if you are if you're contacting this woman to get some of the 200 ounces of breast milk, it's not like for your own kid that you have had biologically. It's for some other purpose, like you have a fetish for it or you want to put it in your coffee or something.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whatever.
Probably.
Have at it. I'm just saying, like, you know, it just seems like one of those things. That is a sort of caveat emptor. You know, I mean, you got to realize that that's just like taking, that's like just getting like, like donor sperm or something from just some guy that like you found in the nickel ads.
Or deciding to become blood brothers with some guy you met on Twitter.
Exactly. So, I mean, whatever. I mean, it's a big world. Have at it.
At a State Department speech for the U.S. Secretary of State, okay, this doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
I'll ignore that one because that makes no sense. We'll try this one instead. President Obama and Chinese President Hu Jintao held a White House news conference after their meetings today. Mr. Obama says Americans will benefit from new trade relationships established between the two countries.
We've completed dozens of deals that will increase U.S. exports by more than $45 billion and also increase China's investment in the United States by several billion dollars.
That sounds like a good idea.
From machinery to software, from aviation to agriculture, these deals will support some 235,000 American jobs.
I couldn't possibly go wrong.
Obama said he held firm on the need for China to deal fairly with American companies.
I did also stress to President Hu that there has to be a level playing field
President
for
Who?
American companies.
Okay, I swore that I wasn't going to do that. I made a promise to myself that I was not going to make that joke today. But I'm glad that you did, because now it's like I can check it off the list. It's like an itch that's been scratched. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
No, it's like you have to, because otherwise it lingers out there like a thing that everybody is thinking, you know? Then it becomes just like a distracting... It becomes like a distracting elephant in the newsroom, you know, where you're wondering when it's going
to
happen. All right.
I did also stress to President Hu that there has to be a level playing field for American companies competing in China. The trade has to be fair. So I welcomed his commitment that American companies will not be discriminated against when they compete for Chinese government procurement contracts.
Also, if you could quit running over your citizens with tanks, maybe at some point in the future, that'd be nice too. But I mean, don't feel like you have to get to that right away. It's more important than my iPhone stay under $600.
Yeah, you know, because the big American corporations, they're needing the help there. So.
Yeah, they're charities.
The fairness of all that is important.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news, also Science on the March. Next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program commences Encircling the Globe with your Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week Today, and also a top five. Yesterday I had this whole notion, which itself seems like something that came out of a drug-induced fever dream, where I was going to do this top five. It was the top five songs that sounded like you had just done a bunch of cocaine.
Yeah.
And which I'm still going to do at some point, but right now I'm only at four. And we need at least five, maybe six. So I'm only
and then
at four.
You were going to do this as someone who has not actually done cocaine.
And then you would do a follow-up
And
list.
Then as someone, you know, with a more checkered past who actually knows what it feels like to do cocaine, I was going to do one as well, and we were going to compare and contrast.
So I feel like we're still going to do that. So I will do my list probably tomorrow, because I feel like I need more time to put that together. Today, though, because of the passing of Don Kirshner, the man with the golden ear, who is a bubblegum music impresario and Svengali and so forth. That was yesterday. Today we'll be doing the top five classic bubblegum songs. So that'll be coming up next out.
That's a, no, I like that.
That was
That's
so
exciting.
Cute what you just did there. Okay. You do that like maybe once a week, and I consider myself lucky. All right. So that's coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Show, Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, and the top five classic bubblegum songs. So that is next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where, by the way, we have yet another listener in Scotland. I just saw that come across the transom.
The transom.
Yesterday. Another Scotland listener.
I had a listener friended me on Facebook the other day. And added the note and said, "Hello, I am your biggest fan in Tokyo," which are words I swear to God, it had never occurred to me anyone would ever say to me.
You're huge in Japan.
Japan.
Awesome.
Three New Jersey women were arrested after they allegedly tried to sell cases of Four Loko to undercover cops. Police say detectives, posing as college students, responded to an advertisement on Craigslist and set up a meeting to buy three cases of Four Loko for $335. The three women, all in their 20s, were charged with selling an alcoholic beverage without a state license. Four Loko was banned in New York last November, which quickly resulted in a black market on Craigslist, where the caffeine-infused alcoholic beverage is sold for as much as $8 a can.
It's almost like they are denied access to history books in certain parts of the country. It's like someone has gone in and just like forcibly blanked out the sections of their brain that deal with anything that happened before last week. You know, they just can't... I mean, they can't have... Even as
you're
dumb
boggled,
as
you?
Politicians could sometimes be. But I mean, there's no way they can't have seen this coming. How could they? Is it possible that they did not anticipate we'll make it illegal and that will get rid of it forever? And I mean, is it conceivable that they just never occurred to them that there would then be a black market that would spring up for this prohibited product?
It probably did occur to many law enforcement officials. And so they needed to immediately set up like Four Loko task forces and have meetings and write things on whiteboards.
I mean, that I never really thought about that part of it, that even as one branch of government was making it illegal, another branch of government was then having to like form all of these task forces to go stem the rising wave of crime that was going to come from the prohibition of it.
Yes.
All right, fine. There's nothing else I can... I just wanted to clarify. All right. You're listening to Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's Science on the March for Wednesday, January 19th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric.
I put my science news aside, and now I don't know where it is. Ah, here it is. Thank you. Nearly 10,000 years ago, man's best friend provided protection and companionship and an occasional meal. That's what researchers are saying after finding a bone fragment from what they are calling the earliest confirmed domesticated dog in the Americas. University of Maine graduate Samuel Belknap III came across the fragment while analyzing a dried-out sample of human waste unearthed in southwest Texas in the 1970s. A carbon dating test put the age of the bone at 9,400 years, and a DNA analyst confirmed it came from a dog, not a wolf, coyote, or fox. Because it was found deep inside a pile of human excrement and was the characteristic orange-brown color that bone turns when it's passed through the digestive tract, the fragment provides the earliest direct evidence that dogs, besides being used for company security and hunting, were also eaten by humans and may have been bred as a food source.
Who's tasty? Who? Who? Oh, that's a tasty dog.
Get in the pot. Get in the pot. Belknap wasn't researching dogs when he found the bone. Rather, he was looking into the diet and nutrition of people who lived in the lower Pecos region of Texas between 1,000 and 10,000 years ago. It just so happens, he says, this person who lived 9,400 years ago was eating dog. Researchers from the University of Maine and the University of Oklahoma's Molecular Anthropology Laboratories, where DNA analysis are done, have written a paper on their findings. Dogs have played an important role in human culture for thousands of years, by the way. There are archaeological records of dogs going back 31,000 years from a site in Belgium, 26,000 years in the Czech Republic, and 15,000 years in Siberia. For his research, Belknap, who does not own a dog himself, had fecal samples shipped to him that had been unearthed in 1974 and 75 from an archaeological site known as Hinds Cave, and that were kept in storage at Texas A&M University.
It's odd that you would just sort of sit around, like, rubbing your hands together with barely concealed glee because you're waiting for the FedEx guy to bring you some poop.
Old poop? 9,000-year-old poop?
I mean, I'm not saying there isn't a scientific, you know, need to examine that sort of thing. It's just, it's like being a proctologist. You just don't really, like, when you're at graduate school or whatever, you don't really see yourself like that's where your life is ending up, that you're the guy who sits and just paws through human waste, you know, looking for stuff.
Well, even more interesting to me is that this guy then contacts Texas A&M University and says, I would like a sample of your old poop. And then there's some guy, some research associate who's like, you know, doing his graduate studies or something, and he's told to go get it and pack it up in the FedEx box, and he's walking around somewhere in this dusty basement going, okay, where do we keep the really old poop?
If it's like in a hall of poop somewhere, like yeah, like sort of one of those, like one of those records rooms they have at a hospital, you know, or a police station, like an evidence control, where he sort of, you know, he's got like a little slip of paper in his hand, like, you know, like at the library with a Dewey decimal number written on it. He's like, okay, 325.7, crap. And he just, you know, and what does that place smell like? I mean, the room where they keep all of the poo.
Well, the dried poop. I mean, it's 9,000 years old, so it probably doesn't smell much like much of anything at this point. But,
by the way, we should note that there's nobody in this study at any point expressed any interest about the oldest domesticated cat.
No.
It's not a thing anybody cares about.
No.
Just FYI.
They don't care about us, we don't care about
them.
That's
what I'm saying.
you might recall from the Star Wars movies, Rick Emerson.
Might I?
The two twin suns sinking into the horizon.
Yes.
It could actually be happening here on Earth at some point. The infamous red supergiant star in Orion's nebula, Betelgeuse, is predicted to go gangbusters, and the impending supernova may reach Earth before 2012.
Hooray!
And when it does, all of our wildest Star Wars dreams will come true.
Now, when you say all of our wildest Star Wars dreams, do you mean that we're going to be immolated in a flash of fire and we'll be rendered into piles of ash?
Yes, and all the ladies will look like Princess Leia and be chained up in front of giant smid monsters.
But only for half a second.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
The biggest star in the universe is losing mass, a typical indication that a gravitation collapse is occurring. When that happens, according to Dr. Brad Carter of the University of Southern Queensland, we will get our second sun. This old star is running out of fuel at its center, he says. The fuel keeps Betelgeuse shining. And is it Betelgeuse or did they say Betelgeuse?
No, it is Betelgeuse, I believe.
Oh, that's what I thought. Okay,
yeah.
Good. When the fuel runs out, the star will literally collapse in on itself and will do so very quickly. When that happens, a giant explosion will occur tens of millions of times brighter than the sun. The thing is, it could also happen in a million years. But the important thing is that one day, night will become day for several weeks on Earth. I'm sure nothing bad could happen from that.
Well, you know, you're reading the Bill Bryson book about the... Now, which book is it you're reading? Because he's got two that came out, like, almost back-to-back. One is about the notion of private time and you know, solitude and human solitude and private space and the idea of living... The idea of having a private life is as compared to a public sort of tribal life. And then he's got another one about the part that royalty and religion played in the development of science.
Actually, I'm reading At Home, which is basically about...
Yeah, it's that. That's
yeah.
The former, I think.
Okay. Well, kind of. It's really just about about civilization, basically. Going through a house room by room and talking about architecture and the like in the dining room section, it's about architecture that would create dining rooms and then eating utensils and what people use for eating utensils. And it talks about, you know, furniture and this sort of thing. But then he ends up branching off into things like, you know, salt production and, you know, because you know how he just goes off in these directions about everything.
That's the great thing about a Bill Bryson book is no matter what it is that he's writing about, no matter what the subject is, he always ends up talking to you about, like, you know, the role that some Peruvian physicist played, you know, in the creation of, like, I don't know, of, like, the Goodyear Tire Company or something. What was my point? He actually has a whole discussion in A Short History of Nearly Everything where he talks about supernovae, as they are called, and also the fact that it's not unique, but apparently is rare for there to be only one sun or star near planets. In other words, the fact that we just have one sun that rises in the morning, that is the exception, not the rule. The rule is to have a binary sunrise, which is to have two of them. So when you know, Luke is out on whatever Tatooine or something, and he's, you know, looking up, and apparently that is how most of the planets in all of known creation, that is how they function. Apparently, I had some larger point to make here. What was it? Wait, Tatooine,
supernovas.
Oh, in Britain, they actually do say Betelgeuse.
Hmm.
They actually do not say, because he references that in Short History of Nearly Everything, and so does Stephen Moore in the spoken word version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. He refers to Ford Prefect as being from the vicinity of Betelgeuse.
Well, I had always heard it pronounced Betelgeuse, and then I was under the impression it was sort of like, you know, how we stopped saying Uranus. It's kind of like, I think after the movie Beetlejuice, people started saying Betelgeuse,
right.
So no one would snicker.
So people wouldn't go, what do you mean? And then you'd have to clarify it. All right.
Japanese toilets are famed for functions such as posterior shower jets and perfume bursts, but an entertainment company, Sega, has gone a step further by installing urine-controlled games in Tokyo urinals. Four types of toilets, are available to be played during a test period ending this month at four male bathrooms in pubs and game arcades in a project aimed to drawing attention to digital advertisements.
Aimed.
Each urinal is fitted with a pressure sensor, and a small digital display is placed at eye level. Digital advertisements are shown after the games. Games include Graffiti Eraser, in which a taser tries to aim at the pressure sensor in the urinal to erase virtual graffiti on the display. Mannequin Pies, or it could be Mannequin Piss, it's P-I-S. Named after a Brussels fountain depicting a urinating boy, measures the volume of the user's stream as a game. And another is called The North Wind and the Sun and Me, in which the strength of the urine stream determines the extent to which a virtual girl's skirt gets blown up by a digital wind. On a splashing battle pits the user against the previous urinal user in terms of stream strength. First-time foreign visitors to Japan are often baffled by the complexity of Japanese high-tech toilets, which feature computerized control panels, usually with Japanese language instructions as well as pictograms. The toilets will be available in limited product locations until January 31st, with no concrete plans to make them into actual products.
Here's the thing. They say that they don't have any plans to make them into actual products, but we know that's a lie because we've seen the products that they already have. It's a country that sells used underwear in vending machines. Of course they're going to make these into actual products. So this is one of those things where simultaneously you think like, you know, like you sort of admire, I guess, the fact that they're trying to inject science and technology and technological advancement into every realm of human existence. On the other hand, you just realize why women find men to be retarded and revolting, you know?
Well, I was fascinated by the whole idea that there are urinals, and they're used in some, like, public areas and, like, subways in some cities and stuff, where there is, like, a graphic of a fly that has been baked into the porcelain at the bottom of the
right.
urinal. Because they found that if men have something to aim at,
yeah.
they are less likely to just spray pee all over the place.
It's true. No, I forgot who it was that made this observation, that somebody once said that he, going into a public bathroom at one point, and I'm not trying to be horrible because it's the lunch hour, but going into a public restroom, and some guy had obviously been in there before him and had used it, and had not taken the greatest care while standing and doing his business, and it was a bit of a mess, And he said he had this moment of realization where he felt so bad for women everywhere because he said he understood why women were often so sexually frustrated. He's like, because if a guy can't hit a target this big, he's going to have no chance of finding, locating, or properly using something that is one, like, 200th that size. And also, like, you got to figure, like, what... I know that I'm a little OCD about certain things, and I can be a bit of a neat freak, but I mean, who does that? Who just goes in and just like, I don't know, I just like to let it go wherever nature takes it. Everywhere. I mean, what kind of person does that, really?
Well, there's also the splashing aspect that most men don't think about, and I've been, like, the one female roommate in a house full of guys and have had to clean the bathroom because men don't like to clean the bathroom, even though the ones that splash all of it. But there's also this sort of weird masculinity analog that men have about standing up to pee, because it is possible a man could sit down to pee. You can do it. It can be done. And I asked my husband this once, I said, because he refuses, because men just don't do that. But I asked him, I said, you know, if you had a glass of water, which doesn't smell bad and isn't urine, if you had a glass of water and you were going to pour it into, say, a toilet bowl, you would put your hand down next to the toilet bowl and pour it in carefully so you didn't splash everywhere.
Well, you don't put the beer 3 feet away from the tap when you're pulling a beer.
But you're 6 feet tall and you're peeing at a thing that's like, you know, 8 inches across, and you have no problem with stand basically being 3 feet away from what you're trying to put the thing in. And I said, so why don't you sit down? Why don't men sit down to pee? And he said, we just don't.
Well,
we don't, and you can't ask. And he goes, and that's the thing, is that if a man admits that he sits down to pee because his wife got him to do it, he just looks like a huge pussy.
Well, and I'll say this, I'll admit this publicly, that I will sit on occasion, but you know what those occasions are? Because, see, here's the thing, there's this sort of immovable object, irresistible force thing with guys, where on the one hand, I think guys do have some sort of, A, we're just lazy. You know, and it just seems like unbuttoning your pants and unbuckling and putting your pants, like, it's just way harder. You need to stand and, like, you know, the zipper is there and it's like, bam, done. It's like, well, you're subtracting, like, three additional steps. Also, if you're just living with other guys it's, you know, it's much less of an issue. Like, it doesn't really matter. You're not going to have some girlfriend or wife who gets after you. And you know, like, my wife has never mentioned, like, she's never made any observation about it. But I will say this, that one of the other things that I think guys are conscious of, and maybe this is more if guys are dating or if they're single or something, or if you're, like, in the, if you're, I don't know, like, if you're out sort of in public, I'm very conscious of the noise aspect. And so that is totally a thing. I don't mind admitting that I'll totally do the sit down if you feel like the door is maybe insufficient to retain whatever sound might be created by your bathroom activities. And that is universal. That goes across both genders. But I think men, of course, there's the splashing and the sort of, you know, however high above the toilet you are, that's going to exacerbate the issue of the noise. And so I will totally do that, because not only are you then closer to the actual toilet you're sitting, and I swear to God, we'll be done talking about toilets after this. You're closer. But then if you are sitting on the toilet seat, then it's like you've got the whole ass seal that goes down.
Yes.
And encloses the noise.
It's a sound buffer.
Because here's the, like, if you can just speak honestly, again, especially if you're like a guy who's, you know, you're younger, you're single, you're dating or something, you know, like the idea that you're going to be in the bathroom and you're just like getting your pee on. And meanwhile, some girl that you're hoping to bang later is out there listening to your urine splash around in the bathroom, because that's not a turn on. I mean, really,
no.
From most women. Let's just be honest. So I don't mind admitting I do that if I feel like noise is going to be a problem. Occasionally here.
Yes.
I'll do the sit down if there are people in the kitchen. Because, you know, the bathroom is right next to the kitchen here.
So we have this thing here where we have one bathroom and we share it. We all share it equally. And it's nice. You know, it's nice and hygienic. I think most men also don't realize how bad men's rooms tend to smell.
Well,
because they're used to it.
I will also say, now in defense of my brethren, I will say that having worked as a custodian earlier in my life at various, you know, all kinds of different places, you know, at shopping centers, and I worked on the janitorial crew for a restaurant for a summer. And I'll tell you that women's bathrooms tend to be just as filthy, but just in different ways. You know, there's a different kind of dirtiness that comes with women's bathrooms. We probably should just curtail this conversation
before it
becomes any more vile. But I will say that men, when I drove to Kennewick, two weekends ago, I stopped at a rest stop, you know, on the way from here to Kennewick. So it was, you know, it was wherever, it's like by Hermiston or something, which is just like the a-hole of the universe anyway. But I'm stopping at this rest station by Hermiston, and it's that thing, and I don't know if you do this. I mean, at least men can, like, stand so they don't have to, like, be sitting down or, like, sitting above, like, hovering 3 inches above a toilet in a communal bathroom, which if you're a woman, it's just going to be horrifying. But because you feel like germs can probably just leap up at you. But it's that thing, when I go into a rest stop on the highway, I sit up in my car for a second, and I actually sort of have to psych myself up. I have to kind of brace myself, because you just never know what you're walking into. And one of life's real pleasures, it sounds strange, is when you walk into a rest stop by the side of the highway, and it actually is clean. You know, it's clean, even relatively clean.
And you immediately think, oh, thank God.
Yeah, no, and you go, yeah. Oh, God, such a relief. Because if you walk into a rest stop that is just filthy, it's like you're holding your breath, you're in the airlock of the Nostromo, just so desperately trying not to breathe or have anything go into or out of your body at all while you're there. That's a whole thing of, like, getting in, getting out, getting it done. I don't even know what I was talking about. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Trainers at Discovery Kingdom in Vallejo, California, are mourning the loss of Taj, the oldest elephant in North America. The 71-year-old elephant has been with Discovery Kingdom since 1978, when it was known as Marine World in Redwood City. Before that, she traveled with Circus Vargas and once belonged to the Hare Krishnas. Her trainer called her one of the sweetest elephants you'll ever meet, and the cause of her death will be determined at UC Davis. A woman's a bizarre decision to ride an inflatable doll down Australia's flood-swollen Yarra River blew up in a woman's face yesterday. It blew up when she lost her latex friend in a rough patch. The incident prompted a warning from police in Australia that blow-up sex toys are, quote, not recognized flotation devices. Police and an emergency services crew were called to the rescue, and the woman and a man, both 19, were stuck about 4:30 p.m. They were floating down the river on two inflatable dolls and had just passed the Pound Bend Tunnel when the woman lost her inflatable doll.
How did they, but does it say how they got into the river or why they were using inflatable dolls as flotation devices in the first place?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, there is a lot of flooding in Australia, so people have been swept away by rivers and such.
Oh, so it wasn't just like, they weren't like at a party. It wasn't like a goof or something.
No, I don't think so. I think...
what do we have in the house that floats? Hold on a second.
unless they were, although actually from the sound of it, the police said they were not amused, and they were given life jackets, and I guess they actually decided to do it for fun.
Okay. And they were probably drunk, let's be honest.
Probably. And so the police weren't happy because they said, we've got people busy with actual rescues, and to have to divert resources to that sort of thing is not ideal.
See, again, like everything is in my head recently, I just go to some sort of Arrested Development cutaway where it's just a static shot of the river, and then you just, vibe it on like a huge inflatable thing with boobs.
Senior Constable Wayne Wilson, by the way, also said, the fate of the inflatable dolls is unknown.
Okay, thank you. Everybody's a comedian. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm.
Oh, this isn't science anymore.
Oh, okay. I was wondering about that. That sounded only passingly like science.
Yeah,
like even the broadest possible definition. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They've been in Portland for over a decade, 13 years now. Coincidentally, the same amount of time that the Rick Emerson radio program has been broadcasting to this fine part of the world. Joe Squires and everybody at Squires Electric, they are one of their longtime listeners, longtime supporters, and they've been with Legion of News, since nearly the very beginning. So if you are enjoying this fine piece of radio entertainment that you're listening to right now, if you're listening to this live or you're downloading it, listening to it later, Squires Electric, they're part of the conglomeration of folks that helps to make that possible. So you can contact them at 503-252-1609 the next time you need wires or wiring in your home or business updated or augmented, repaired, installed. If you got an inspection coming up from the city, you want to make sure you're going to pass it on the first try. If you're moving into a new house and you want to make sure that it's going to be able to handle everything that you bring in terms of appliances, in terms of the computers, all of that, they can make sure that it gets done properly, and that your house looks exactly the same as it did before they came in to fix stuff. 503-252-1609, everything from one socket to an entire building, and they can take care of it for you. 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they'll make your life easier. Squires Electric. They bring you science on the march here at Legion of News. This is Don Taylor.
A top Republican in the House has endorsed the suggestion that Democrats and Republicans sit side by side at the president's State of the Union address later this month. House Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy thinks members would embrace the idea, especially following the recent shooting of Representative Gabrielle Giffords.
You fools! You're in danger!
I'm sorry.
They're after you! They're after all of us!
I was totally thinking that!
Everyone! They're here already! You're next!
I'm sorry, I think I played the wrong cut.
The wrong Kevin McCarthy cut, yes.
I think the action that you're seeing where members are now saying, hey, yeah, why don't we sit next to one another? We are all one house. That's the action that you'll see, and it doesn't take a call from somebody because nobody has it. I think you're going to find that people are willing to do it and wanting to do it, and not because someone's out telling them to do it.
The first one was better, I think.
Yeah, and I think he's wrong.
You fools, you're in danger!
Now, here's Don Taylor.
Sarah Palin's inadequate response to the Tucson shootings has not played well in the polls, a new CNN opinion research survey finds, with her unfavorability rating hitting an all-time high of 56%. Her previous high was 55%, recorded in April after the health care reform bill was signed into law. According to the poll, only 38% of Americans now hold positive views of the former Alaska governor and possible 2012 presidential contender. Most of Palin's support has been lost among female voters, who reported a 10% spike in negative views of her, and among independents, who are 14% more likely to think poorly of her than they were prior to her infamous blood liberal remark. Meanwhile, Obama has seen his polls go in the opposite direction. The Hill reports that the president saw his approval ratings rise above 50% in two major polls just 3 months after the Democrats and he took the self-described shellacking in the midterm election.
I don't think it helps that she wears all that lip gloss these days. It makes her look like a hussy.
Yeah. And then she talks.
Yeah, and then
there's the talking that seems to work against her as well.
She's functionally illiterate.
Leading liberal light Sergeant Shriver died on Tuesday at age 95. Although somewhat overshadowed by his brothers-in-law John and Robert Kennedy, Shriver was perhaps the most pure embodiment of big government idealism during the 1960s, according to Time magazine. As director of the Office of Economic Opportunity during Kennedy's and later Johnson's presidency, Shriver created the Peace and Job Corps, Head Start, and a raft of programs to assist the poor as part of the government's war on poverty. In 1968, he helped his wife Eunice Kennedy Shriver found the Special Olympics. Shriver married into the Kennedy family in 1953 and helped run John F. Kennedy's successful 1960 primary campaign in West Virginia. He later served as a vice presidential candidate for George McGovern's failed 1972 presidential bid. He gained another famous in-law when his daughter Maria married Arnold Schwarzenegger. Shriver died in a Maryland hospital after a long battle with Alzheimer's.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, Clown Watch, also Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, and we will count down the top five classic bubblegum songs of all time. That's happening over at RickEmersonShow.com. So if you enjoy the wit and wisdom that is purveyed by Don Taylor and myself, you can hear much more of it every day at RickEmersonShow.com following this program for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. My friends, my chums, my companions, that's at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday.
Melissa Etheridge has been tapped to appear for 1 week as St. Jimmy in Broadway's American Idiot. The show's producers have announced Green Day frontman Billy Joe Armstrong will finish his 50-show turn as St. Jimmy following Etheridge's one-week engagement, which will take place from February 1st to February 6th. Billy Joe and I always believed it would be incredible to have a woman take on the role of St. Jimmy, she said. This character is seductive, thrilling, and dangerous. Melissa Etheridge is all that and so much more, according to Michael Meyer. Michael Meyer? Not the guy who kills people, right?
No, I was just back on the whole thing of Melissa Etheridge being tapped. And I was trying to figure out a way to make a crude pun there, but I couldn't really make it work.
Model Miranda Kerr announced today on her organic skincare website that she and husband Orlando Bloom had a baby boy January 6th named Flynn. I gave birth to him naturally, Kerr wrote, without any pain medication, and it was a long, arduous, and difficult labor, but Orlando was with me the whole time, supporting and guiding me through it. Sting wants to help save dolphins that are being brutally slaughtered in Japan, but says the best way is by starting a debate, not by forcing foreign opinion. The British music star met backstage at a Tokyo concert hall Wednesday with Rick O'Berry, the star of The Cove, the Academy Award-winning documentary about the dolphin hunt in southwestern Japan. The two have been friends since the Sundance Film Festival 2 years ago, where The Cove had its first major showing. The film shows dolphins driven into a cove and stabbed by fishermen on small boats, turning the water red with blood as the dolphins writhe in agony. I was blown away by the movie, Sting told the Associated Press. We should not be eating dolphins. Sting is in Asia for a synchronicity tour and said he's sympathetic to the Save the Dolphins view in the cove, but that the best approach is through dialogue, noting that many Japanese are also outraged by dolphin killing.
When he says we should not be eating dolphins, to whom is he speaking there?
I think it's just the general we. We as humans.
We as a culture. We as a society. People. As a planet.
Or he could mean we British rock stars should not be eating dolphins.
I was going to say, he's shopping at a different store. He's at some Marks and Spencer that I don't have access to.
Maybe he just realized that the craft services table backstage.
Oh my God!
Had dolphin steaks. And he's like, wait a minute.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that. I'm just picturing him just looking over, and there's just endless canapé with just dolphin heads just sitting on it.
And then he said, we should not be eating dolphin in his Sting voice.
I will say this, by the way,
that
movie, The Cove, really is fantastic. And it really is fantastic, and it's manipulative in the best way. I mean, it's manipulative in the way that in the way that Michael Moore films sometimes are. By which I don't refer to his sometimes fanciful use of the facts, but just the way that he very carefully sets up situations and scenarios, and then just sort of gives this like to the solar plexus of your emotional center, and that's really what The Cove does, even though you know it's coming, because it's not like everybody thinks that dolphins are having a great time in planet Earth right now. Like nobody goes, no, dolphins, they got no problems. I mean,
dolphins,
everybody
in Japan, it's like
they go together. You know, like, nobody thinks it's like a zany Felix and Oscar relationship happening between the Japanese and dolphins. But even knowing how they kind of are getting they're kind of getting the bad end of things over there. You watch that movie, and it's just like someone has just taken and just kicked you in the soul repeatedly for about 90 minutes when you're done. Which is the reason that documentaries like that are so powerful and successful, but also the reason that I just choose not to watch them sometimes. Because then you're just walking around with like all of this sort of impotent anger with which you can do nothing. Leaving the theater going, I am so outraged, I can't do anything. Where's a Jamba Juice? You know?
And then you just want to go find a Japanese guy and just punch him in the junk.
Exactly.
And that helps no one.
This is for Ock Ock.
Mad Men's Christina Hendricks lost some of her bling on Sunday night at the Golden Globes.
Don't say that.
I get to say bling so rarely.
Okay.
A 124-carat pear-shaped diamond bracelet set in platinum accidentally slipped off her wrist prior to the awards ceremony. The New York Post reports the actress is horrified to discover the $850,000 bracelet was missing. As panic set in before the show began, she started asking people, "Have you seen a bracelet? A diamond one? I lost one that looks like this." And she pointed to the one that she still had on.
Wow.
She frantically dashed out of the auditorium and back to the red carpet to look for it. Thankfully, an event worker found it and handed it back to her.
God damn.
She returned to the table to wear the bracelet again and then couldn't get it back on because the clasp was tricky. So she gave it to her publicist for safekeeping. A representative from the jeweler confirmed that she wore a total of 200 carats of diamonds for the show. In addition to the lost and then found bracelet, the other was a 49-carat emerald and marquee cut diamond bracelet, also set in platinum.
I mean, I'm the first to acknowledge that shiny rocks don't really matter and that they only are worth that much because we say they are. But that doesn't really matter when you think that we say they are, and so therefore they are, and that you've lost something that costs $850,000.
Yeah, you've got the thing on loan for the evening, and then you look down and you go, crap!
I mean, that's really, you're just going to be, you're going to be washing a lot of dishes at that place after hours to try to pay for that. It's like this, I managed at one point to lose the keys to my boss's BMW years and years and years ago. I mean, it was only for like 7 minutes, but still, you know? And it's not, I mean, it's not like I lost the car itself. But, you know, but I lost the keys, and so then I had to simultaneously be looking for the keys to the BMW, and then, like, peering out the window constantly to make sure that the car hadn't been stolen by whoever might have had the keys. And that's, like, a $50,000 car, so...
Yeah, this would be like you lost the factory that they make the Mercedes at.
It's a bad... That's why I try not to own nice things, because I would inevitably lose them.
That's all the entertainment for now.
There's your entertainment news for Wednesday right here at Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, and the top five classic bubblegum songs.
Michael Steele won't be serving another term as Republican National Committee chair. And in an interview with conservative website From Forum, the soon-to-be ex-leader seemed to be taking the loss pretty hard. "I know exactly how Caesar felt," she said. Steele said of former ally Reince Priebus's decision to run for chairman. "I trust my friends. Well, I guess the adage is right. In Washington, you should get a dog." To critics who accuse him of hemorrhaging money and turning the RNC into a laughingstock, Steele defended his record, claiming that he succeeded by the metrics that mattered: seats won and cash raised. Asked about the many mini-scandals that marred his tenure, controversial remarks about Afghanistan and abortion, the so-called lesbian bondage fiasco, Steele stood by his statement, saying he doesn't want to belong in a party that stays in its comfort zone. As for his future plans, he said, "Doing some TV here and there, and there's a presidential cycle coming up. I plan to play in that a little."
Sitting around in my underwear, staring at the television, drinking Yukon Jack. That's really what that means.
Yeah.
There are no plans.
No,
by
he
Michael
has
Steele.
No plans.
None. Zero.
Hundreds of Utahns, which would be people from Utah, I guess. They're
Why?
Utahns.
What is your problem with that word? Does it seem like it's missing a syllable or something?
It seems just weird. It's Utahns. It's
how would you prefer that it be written or pronounced?
I don't know. I thought about this. I talked to you about this just the other day. I don't know what else you would call people from Utah other than residents of Utah, which sounds...
Utahnians?
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
Utahnics.
When I was a kid, I somehow got into my head that people from Iowa were called Iowonians. Because the same thing. It was like 6 or 7 years old, maybe. Because Iowans sounded like it was missing letters. Like it was like some part of the word got removed somehow. So, all right, Utahnians.
Well, hundreds of Utahnians came together to build more than 1,000 snowmen last weekend, all in the name of a good cause. The recent snow had set the perfect
More white people.
Yeah. More cold white people. Cold, soulless white people. The recent snow had set the perfect scene for the event at the Mountain Dell Golf Course in Salt Lake City, where 500 people spent an hour packing snow and dressing up the winter creations with carrots, coal, and more. Some builders added a bit of personality to their snowmen. One even sported a mohawk. Each snowman had to reach a certain height and don a carrot nose and cookie eyes. The original goal was to make 1,000, but the group surpassed that goal by more than 279 snowmen. For Each Snowman Built, the company ClearLink donated $2 to a group called Youth Making a Difference, an organization that helps high school teens appreciate the importance of service. Every year, the group travels to India to work at an orphanage.
Okay.
And of course, snowmen.
Can we be done?
I think we're done.
Okay, there you go. It's time to bring the curtain down on this, another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, we will be available, this program will be available via iTunes later on today, as well as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. We'll be back again tomorrow at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Aguilar, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. We will see you tomorrow, Thursday, at noon for another installment of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you please?